Nantucket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Welcome to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5, 6 minutes after the hour on this Wednesday morning. We do appreciate you listening. Coming up on the program in about a half hour from now, my good friend Sean Ross, SR Communications. We'll talk to him a little bit about what's going on around the state, watching some of these fundraising numbers, what to expect on the state basis. Always eager to hear from him. That's in at about around 9:30. Coming at 10 o'clock hour, we'll be joined in studio. We're excited about this. John Williams, a city councilman, and I remember when he ran, and it was Ben Brooks got elected to the state senate, and then John Williams filled that seat, seems like yesterday. He'll join us in studio alongside Ben Reynolds, who's running for that seat. Kind of like we did a couple of weeks ago, we had candidates coming in, and that'll be in the 10 o'clock hour. Also at the 10 o'clock hour, friend of the program. Former state senator Rusty Glover. He is a candidate for state auditor, running against another friend in the program, Andrew Sorrell, or as the Huntsville media have decided to call him, Andy Sorrell. But that is an interesting race, and there's a little bit of an I don't know if excitement is the word, but interest in it, because it's probably one of the very few competitive races on the ballot, that state auditor's race. So if anything, maybe it's an opportunity to talk about bigger picture things and just what the state auditor does. Obviously, we will talk about that, but we'll get more into that in the 10 o'clock hour. In 11 o'clock hour, blockbuster hour here, Lieutenant Governor Will Ainsworth will join us, and then we will have U.S. Senate hopeful, Republican hopeful, Katie Britt, who's going up against Mo Brooks, Jessica Taylor, and Linda Blanchard for that U.S. Senate seat. Richard Shelby stepping down at the end of his term, not running for re-election. So wide open there. 251-343-0106. If you would like to weigh in on anything we are talking about this morning. The two big stories, I think, still remains Andrew Cuomo stepping down from governor. And then, obviously, this infrastructure bill, very, very, very big win for the Democrats to get it through the Senate. 19 Republicans going along with it. But beyond that, there's the tag-along $3.5 trillion budget with all the social spending that everyone's worried about. I never underestimate these guys on Capitol Hill, but I'm still a little skeptical of that future and how far that goes. It's just like there's a lot of hurdles to overcome. Joe Manchin and Kristen Sinema really, really banking on those two. Maybe they can be bought off or swayed. And I tell you, watching Kristen Sinema, you know how the Democrats, when you turn on MSNBC or whatever, and that's who they go after. That is their target. If there is a Democrat they don't like, it is her. You could have inserted the name John McCain and gotten the same reaction from Republicans. She has turned into the John McCain of the Democratic Party. It's a natural fit. That Senate seat in Arizona is the maverick seat. And that is what people in Arizona apparently want. It's fascinating to watch how she is the Democrat carbon copy of what John McCain was. So, but then also the Senate parliamentarian, I tell you, the closer this gets, whether or not they are able to pull this off on Capitol Hill, whether or not they are able to get it together, it feels very, very lead up to the Tea Party. Not quite as intense yet. But once people get, once they start going through this package, this bill, and see some of the stuff that's in there. And we've heard some of it during the news here, bridges from Canada and or whatever, all of the social spending, everything from top to bottom in both packages, in both of the bills. And you have some key groups, I don't know, like Americans for Prosperity type of group, Club for Growth, start making spots, campaign commercials, start pushing that out there. So they're pushing the narrative out there about how wasteful this is or how ridiculous it is. It's like the shrimp on the treadmill. And then you see the public start to turn. But this is kind of the natural progression. You know, here I go again with that pendulum swinging back and forth that we're in the middle of summer here and we're heading into fall, as we always do. But that's what's happening. It feels very repetitive to me. They're having to negotiate with the Senate parliamentarian. And it's Obamacare 2.0, not that the tactics are necessarily part of that, but the political consequences, the political fallout feel like that. Also, it does this whole discussion we're having about all this right now, who does it keep out of the news? It keeps Andrew Cuomo out of the news. I don't know that Republicans have sufficiently capitalized on that situation, because if it were a Ron DeSantis, and that's what they're doing, they're going after Ron DeSantis over mask and whatever. But the whole Me Too, they rode the Me Too wave to beat Mitt Romney in 2012. Mr. Binder's full of women. And the Republicans aren't doing anything with this, at least not sufficiently. I mean, so you see Janice Dean come up on Fox News, the meteorologist who lost her in-laws in a nursing home because of Andrew Cuomo's decision to open up the nursing homes to COVID patients. But what are we, you know, there might be more to be done there. I'm not sure what it is. I'm sure smarter people are looking at this. Maybe this isn't a typical Republican issue, that it's they fear that it treads into the territory of cancel culture. But politically, and it's the other thing, you know, that New York gubernatorial seat doesn't even look winnable. More so now, less so now than it did before Cuomo had stepped down, or its city was going to step down. But that's been brushed to page two already, and Republicans are allowing that to happen. Meanwhile, we're just getting this barrage of anti-DeSantis mask, anti-mask mandate, this battle within. And at some point, if these numbers continue to go up, then it'll feel like the momentum's working against Governor DeSantis. That's what you got to be wary of. I know a lot of you in this audience are anti-mask, anti-vaccine, or anti-vaccine mandate. And if the numbers go in the wrong direction in a significant way, they're going to vilify DeSantis, or Death Santis, or whatever. That could be problematic. But it is shameless what they're doing. They're not talking about the governor of New York State stepping down in scandal. They're talking about the governor of Florida, who's got a 50% vaccination rate there. It's not like Alabama or Mississippi or something. And he's probably right when he says this. It seems seasonal, because if you remember a year ago, it was summer when the virus really spiked. So, watching that situation, what's being made out of that, and we're having these debates about masks. Rand Paul's YouTube page suspended because he was a critic of masks. These tech companies, I think, just don't get really how the world works. And it's going to come back to haunt them. They should just, no one is looking at Rand Paul's YouTube page for pointers on whether or not to wear masks. But you start suspending lawmakers, you really are playing with fire. Just one by one. And then ultimately, at some point along the way, you're going to have a tough vote. You're going to need... You may not getting around Paul, but there's going to be other members that are seeing what's going on here. And it's kind of disrespect for the body of the United States Senate. And it's going to come back to haunt them. But such as it is, these tech companies like to make these stands. But back to DeSantis. And just that was wall-to-wall of that on the morning shows this morning. And they are trying to lionize some of these superintendents around the state of Florida that are defying DeSantis. They are making them, trying to make them heroes. I don't know. The other thing, this is the discussion, basically. If you're not really tuned into this, the anti-maskers want you to die. The pro-maskers want you to want us to thrive as a society and move on. What's missing from that discussion? Why are you an anti-masker? And there's all of these consequences. You could go down the line and you could have a discussion about them and you could talk about the merits of them, but that is being shut out. There's a social cost to this. It's also, somebody brought this up the other day. It's been a while since I've ridden a school bus, but in the middle of August, right on a school bus with one of those masks on, and that would be miserable. So there's all of these things we could have a discussion about and point out along the way, but the media kind of have this category cornered here, and they're not allowing that much of that talk about, you know, what are the consequences? What are the pros and cons? We never had that honest discussion. What would lead a Ron DeSantis or a Greg Abbott to say no mask in public schools? What is the inspiration for that? And it's beyond just the public, although that's a very important part of it. It's beyond just the public saying we don't want this. But there are reasons the public don't want it that aren't fully being acknowledged, and they're not being allowed to be acknowledged. And probably just got to get on top of that. They got to figure out the messaging. They got to talk to some experts. You can't have the crazy Haitian doctor or whatever. You got to have some experts in the field that can explain this. And it should be fairly common sense. Shouldn't be that difficult. But the way it's being categorized is DeSantis, a governor, former a sailor in the Navy, yada, 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 officer in the Navy. He is trying to play the role of doctor. And he doesn't know any more about this than we do. But here's what our experts tell us. They always bring out these authoritarian type of health experts that say, they don't just say that you should get vaccinated, you probably should wear a mask. That would be my advice. We must make people do this. We have to stop the spread. We must do this. We must use the power of government. And then you just have the Don Lemon type of host there. Oh, well, you're the expert. But they bring these experts on that want to use the full force of government. Who's it? The former head of Planned Parenthood. And they bring somebody like that on and say, no, the federal government has to, you know, Joe Biden has to say, you all must take the vaccine. We must have mandatory vaccines. And that's just not going to work. Not in our society. But I have my suspicions about this. I always thought, the health community, if you go to the doctor and you get some advice, and it's like you need to lose some weight, maybe stop smoking, stop your drinking, get more sleep. You know when you get that bill of health, and it's questionable. But then maybe you cut back for a little while, but you never really fully live up to that advice. And it feels a little bit like this. Maybe I'll try to explain that a little bit better in the next segment. Let's get a break here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Nobody looking back again.
Hello, Kansas. Sweet Bill Farmer, let me thank you for your time. You work a 40-hour week for a living. Just to send it on down the line.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poore Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks so much for listening. Come up in the next segment, Sean Ross of SR Communications joins us, so stick around for that. But back to the point I was trying to make, though. You go to the doctor, get told to do a bunch of things, and you don't do them. Well, now imagine the doctor having the power of the government, the full force, the medical community saying, you know, we have this obesity epidemic, we, you know, diabetes, or we have this we have this cancer epidemic that, you know, so no smoking, and you see where this goes, and you see where that leads. So I feel like there's just the only way you can really approach this is, and plus with medicine, there's all these varying opinions about it. You really got to leave it up to the individual. I think that's true nationally. I think it's true here statewide. That would be my hope. Now, I would just encourage, I would lobby the doctors. I would lobby the family doctor, the local doctor, rather than trying to mandate it from the top down. You know, but here comes Big Brother and his vaccination squads. How frightening does that sound? But there's people that don't think that sounds frightening at all. They think that is perfectly acceptable on the left. And then it's like messaging, faux pas. Maybe that works in Vermont. Maybe that works in Manhattan. Just not going to work nationally. 251-343-0106. Dave writes, I've had mandatory vaccines my whole military life, LOL. Well Dave, the good thing about it is we have a volunteer military in this country. And I would assume part of the conditions for service is that you get vaccinated. He also writes, my brothers are doctors. The companies they work for tell them what to do about this. Bean counters, lawyers. It's our system. But no. All of this is all voluntary. You could choose not to go to work for a company that requires a vaccine. It may make your life a little harder. This is different. This is everybody must do it as a requirement. This has no, you know, you need to get the vaccine to serve. You need to get the vaccine to work here. It's different. This is mandatory vaccines. Doug writes, when I hear or see Fauci, I think I am hearing and seeing a disciple of Satan. Well, that's a little strong. And yes, I had the vaccine, but these people are eat up with themselves. I said this the other day. Actually, my wife said this, but I kind of stole it from her. Anthony Fauci is like an Ayn Randian villain. That you know, those of you that have ever read The Fountainhead or Atlas Shrugged, Fauci just reeks of that, right? I don't know what it is, but she would that would be something Ayn Rand would have casted as a villain in one of her books. The New Yorker, changing the story all the time. The ends justify the means. We all must do this together. And kind of the elitist perspective as well. It all kind of just, that's outer borough of New York type of approach, a persona, and that approach to government that is individual rights and liberties aren't important. That's all academic stuff. I'm moving on here. You're not going to stop spread no matter what you do. Has the lockdowns worked? The answer is no. Keep your hands clean. Keep your distance. Keep your hands away from your face. Maybe. I wonder why people won't. That's not being discussed. It's something like the measles or chickenpox. Everybody's going to have to go through a bout of COVID-19 and just get it over with and build up your own natural immune system. That we got to figure out ways to treat it. It's like the common cold. Don writes, good morning, Jeff. Well, good morning. Don, given the opportunity, would you please ask your two guests running for city council about their feelings for the lack of air conditioning on all the school buses in Mobile County and the recent mandated dangerous mask requirements on the buses? Well, I don't. The city council doesn't have much to do with that. It's a school board question. We got one more here. Who assumes liability when the vaccine is mandated? People die from the vaccine. I assume you would have to take care of that at the ballot box. That's all I could figure. The first thing I remember. Let's get a break here. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
And the youngins dream of growing up to ride on a freight train leaving town, not knowing where I'm bound. And no one could change my mind, but Mama tried.
They begin to run it on down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico.
We look down a river and we see the British come, and there must have been 100 of them beating on the drum. They stepped so high and they made the bugles ring. We stood beside our cotton bales and didn't say a thing.
Welcome back to the Jump Horse Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thank you very much for listening on this Wednesday morning. We do appreciate it. 34 minutes after the hour. 251-343-0106. Hit us up on the text line. That works really, really well. I've been back and forth here with Dave from Gulf Shores just about the military and their vaccine requirements. Real quick before we get to Shawnee, he says, you know, his parents were in the military and they required their children to have vaccines. Modern society is not the 1960s military. And look, the military today, it may be mandating that through the Biden administration that you get a vaccine. But it wasn't without some controversy. But I would just say your military service in 2021 is voluntary. It's we have a volunteer military for now, and who knows? Well, that could change in the future or how that goes. They reinstated the draft or something, then we have a different discussion. But it's not compulsory. But in terms of service are that you get vaccinated. So if you're not willing to get vaccinated, you probably ought not go enlist or try to serve in the military. Anyway, enough of that. Joining us now, very pleased to bring on my next guest, SR Communications, the one and only Sean Ross. Sean, good morning. How are you?
Hey, Jeff. Good morning. How are you doing?
Doing well, doing well. Let's kick it off here. Bill Poole, obviously, leaving to go serve in the Ivy administration. Danny Garrett, named Education Trust Fund Chairman. Not a big surprise there.
No, that was the natural choice, and, I think a good one. I guess we'll see who the vice chair is going to be, maybe Kyle South. I think the ETF budget in the House is in good hands.
Yeah. He was in line. And as soon as we got that Bill Poole story, that just seemed like where that was headed, that he was, I don't know if I told you this, I told somebody this, but he's very loyal to leadership. That is Danny Garrett. In some ways, he's more loyal to leadership than leadership is to itself. And he just made sense in that spot.
Yeah, well, he's still the majority whip, Jeff. So, I mean, he's certainly a member of leadership himself there behind the scenes, at least. And, I think certainly his focus and expertise on tax-related issues and just finance in general are going to be important, of course, in addition to his, years of service on the committee. So, I mean, you just can't find anybody with a better resume to do the job than him in the House.
Yeah, I think you're right. Let's talk election politics. One thing that's really interesting to me, kind of looking at some of the fundraising highlights, we don't, at the state constitutional offices, the one that intrigues me, and I think probably is the only one that's going to intrigue us for a little while, is the auditor race. And I wouldn't say two heavyweights, but two formidable candidates in Rusty Glover and Andrew Sorrell there. But I don't know what to make of it. I guess it's going to come down to geography, if I had to guess. That it's just tough to win from the Shoals statewide. But
I haven't seen any polling on it, Jeff, yet. I assume Rusty has some statewide name ID left over from 18. He's going to have a huge geographic base in Mobile, Baldwin counties, as well as some of the more rural southwestern Alabama counties. Sorrell, right now, it seems like he's headed towards a financial advantage, though, which is, important in a down ballot race like this. I mean, if he's going to have a few hundred thousand dollars to spend on a state auditor's race, that's certainly not nothing. So. What I'm interested to see now is if maybe some of the trade associations in the state and what I guess you would call the business community, or whether they really care about this enough to get financially invested in Rusty Glover's campaign. Because, I think he's going to have a lot of support from those associations. I mean, he's somebody who has shown himself to be a very, just reasonable actor, and I think somebody who really understands issues, gets invested in issues, and isn't there to, use the job as a soapbox of any kind. So, you know, we're just going to have to see if, again, people care about the Auditor's race enough to give him money.
Well, there's a tradition there of not the you know, the usual players in Alabama politics not really bothering with that office, because it does have some powers, but they're maybe not as relevant to the business community or the ag community. And it's one of these constitutional offices that is, for that reason, I think is brought in to pretty solid candidates to run for it, because they didn't have to go out and raise a bunch of money knowing that they had the deck stacked against them when it came to that.
That's right. Absolutely. And look, you could probably still see one or more two candidates get in this race. I mean, I think this is a race where there's just a lot of opportunity for grassroots or a, you know, small geographic base to essentially win you the election, Jeff. So, I think this is going to be very, very competitive.
Are there any other races on that ballot that you see in that way that we're not done yet? I mean, when I say not done, I'm sure there will be other candidates, and we could speculate about what Tim James or Jim Ziegler will do at the top of the ballot there. But down ballot, anything that would make you go, hmm?
I think we're still waiting for somebody else at least to get in the Secretary of State race. I think the PSC position currently occupied by Jeremy Oden, I feel like there is going to be more than one challenger. And we're still waiting to hear from John McMillan, our state treasurer, whether he's going to run for re-election or retire. So that's kind of the big shoe to drop that, you know, for example, could open up a slot for somebody like John Merrill to be running for office in 2022.
Yeah, it does seem like you watch Merrill, and not that Merrill, he always has been this way even before the scandal, but he's back on the, you know, back on the circuit, going around speaking different places. To me, that did just suggest, when he goes above and beyond in such a way as this, that would be kind of the way it seems, he's at least keeping the door open for something else.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's he's back on the trail more or less, and you know, really, I mean, if you and I didn't know what happened, you would just assume it was business as usual, just looking at his public activity, Jeff. So I think there's a tremendous chance that he's running for one of these down ballot races.
Yeah, I think you're right. It is fascinating to watch. And whenever we you were the first to say this, but others have said this too, people probably aren't as aware of his infidelity issue, that they're not thinking about that. And that seems to have faded from the, you know, obviously we would remember it, and a lot of other people would remember it. But when you're talking about a race with so much going on from top to bottom, a ballot with so much going on from top to bottom, that, you know, that check a box. Oh, I recognize that name, but I can't remember quite why.
Yep. Yeah, no, that's exactly right. You know, in a race where one of his competitors would have, you know, the money to increase the awareness of the issue, that would be a problem for him still. But, you know, in one of these down ballot races where that's really just not a factor. I mean, I bet if you polled it right now, Jeff, less than 20% of the electorate would know what we're talking about. So I just think he could pretty easily win one of these down ballot cheaper races.
Yeah, I think you're right. The whereabouts of one Jeff Colbin, who ran for AL2, still looking to be in the politics game. There was some discussion about him running for Senate. But do you think he will show up again?
That's a great question. I mean, there were really strong rumblings that he was going to get in to that race again in the 2nd Congressional District, and it's been radio silence since then. So, look, I mean, I think we could certainly have an interesting race, whether it's him or just somebody else as a viable candidate getting in that race, you know, as a kind of as a freshman congressman going into the second term. That's really when an incumbent will be vulnerable, if they're vulnerable. So, well, I think we could get a fun race down there. I just don't know where Jeff Coleman is. It's kind of a weird thing, Jeff.
But you think, I don't know that Barry Moore is necessarily as vulnerable as maybe they think. I just, And I don't know what you. We never really talked about this fully in 2020 when Barry Moore won by that 20 point margin, because no one saw that coming. And you know, was it just happened to be that day of the week, and then everything just kind of went his way? Or is there maybe more to Barry Moore than we realize?
I think there is some vulnerability there. Ultimately that victory was really a myriad of things. I mean, including the Club for Growth money, including the debate victory for Barry Moore, including just some of Jeff Coleman's unique vulnerabilities. But look, not that Barry Moore would be easy to beat this cycle. I do think he is beatable if the right candidate with the right financial backing comes along.
Joined by Sean Ross of SR Communications, political consultant, Montgomery based. Sean, looking at the field of candidates running for legislature, a lot of the incumbents running again. Any incumbents that you could tell that we need to watch that are vulnerable?
No, not really. The governor is strong. Lieutenant governor is. Not only is he extremely strong, but he's unopposed right now. Same thing for the attorney general. Then you just kind of go down the list, and nothing's popping to me yet.
But these legislative races, you always have like a every cycle has a Larry Stutz or Tom Watley, Andrew Jones situation where you look at it, you look close at it, and you can say maybe, you know, especially that seat that Jones holds. I know he's going to have an opponent. But he's already out hitting the ground campaigning. Do you think there's something in the cards there where an incumbent that's running for re-election could get knocked off?
Yeah, I'm sure we'll have a few interesting ones. One that I'm hearing might be pretty competitive is Debbie Woodsey. I think she's a great member, but apparently she just has a pretty significant challenger. I know this isn't an incumbent, but I'm also interested in that. Covington County House seat that Mike Jones is going to be vacating. I think that could be an interesting one.
The Jimmy Hawley seat. Now I know he's got a opponent for that. Is that but he seems to be solidly the favorite.
Yeah, absolutely. I do think Mike Jones is the favorite for that, but it should still be an interesting race. Jimmy Hawley's been in that seat for so long that you just never really know where an electorate's going to go once they actually have to make a decision.
I mean, that would be a tough one, right? There's no playbook there. The lines are still going to change, I think. I think we're going to see some significant changes in lines in the north and the south. But looking at that, how that goes, there's no playbook for Crenshaw County or Covington County or, you know, what constitutes Jimmy Hawley's district that you kind of start from scratch.
Yeah, it's a big geographic district, too, as you know, Jeff. I mean, stretching into Pike County. It's just a very large, large district and pretty unique.
Yeah, and I guess is it true with that, though, direct mail is probably the way they approach that? You can't really go knock on every door and, you know, buying TV or radio, that doesn't, you know, maybe a little bit of radio could go a long way, but it really comes down to direct mail.
Yeah, and, you know, obviously digital to some extent, but, you know, you're in the state legislative race, I mean, you're rarely spending on TV anyways, but, you know.
Unless you're like a Jabba Wagner or something, you're in a big market, right?
Yeah, unless you're, you know, Del Mar, so you just have the money, but, especially in this one, I mean, you're essentially between two TV markets, so you definitely can't spend on TV. So yeah, you're right. Direct mail, obviously, a few select radio stations and some digital, and as well as the traditional grassroots.
Yeah, you do go into the pancake breakfasts and the Kiwanis Club meetings and doing that. That seems to be. I always wonder how far that really what that really means. You know, going to these meetings, how much of a impact on your bearing your position politically? Going to Elbert Peters' meeting up at Huntsville, because those of you who are listening probably aren't familiar with it. One of the biggest attended Republican Party meetings in the state, once a month, is in Madison County, and there's 300 people that show up once a month, and then it's always been that way. But you know, you look at that one, but you look at the others, and going to these Republican Party gatherings, how much do they bolster your chances?
You know, they're important to do. They're absolutely critical to do. I mean, these are the people who are most active. They're the influencers in communities who attend these events. So even though you might only hit, in a normal meeting, probably a few dozen at the most, Jeff, a few dozen people, in reality, those people are going around and spreading the word for, the rest of the election cycle about what they heard. So they're important to do, absolutely.
Well, they're the opinion leaders, the thought leaders. They're the ones that are really going to put down the signs in the yard, I guess, it seems.
Yeah, that's right. That's right, absolutely. I mean, there are things you just absolutely have to do. But obviously, if that's all you're doing, that's not going to be nearly enough. But you have to do it.
Sean, real quick, folks want to find you on social media. Tell them where to look.
Thanks, Jeff. Twitter, SEAN underscore COMMS, Sean underscore comms.
Sean, we appreciate it. We'll talk again next week.
Thanks, Jeff.
Sean Ross, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Because South's going to do it again and again.